I'm Mike Lubick of the New York Daily News and MLB.com.
I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press.
And I'm Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe and ESPN, and we welcome you to the Friday morning edition of the Sports Reporters. We are with you every Monday and Friday, and we are having a good time, and we hope that you are too. And we are finally, gentlemen, at the juncture in the NBA postseason, the offseason, where it won't all be strict conversation. There will be by 11:59, supposedly tonight, something concrete to talk about with regard to the perambulations or perhaps of Mr. LeBron James, who will have to inform the Cavaliers as to whether he is going or opting into the contract or out, or whatever way you want to look at it. I don't know about you guys, but I feel as if I was LeBroned out, on New Year's Day with this regard, but thank God it's finally here.
And Bobby and Mitch, is it, you know, I was saying to Zach Lupica last night, I want wherever he goes, just tell me when he's there and then we can all move on. But Zach made a good point. It's not really him that's doing it. It's our obsession with him that seems to be driving this. And in a normal year, there's a whole bunch of other interesting guys, but it's him and then everybody else.
Well, in fairness, he does tilt everything in the league. It feels like annually. It's not annually. It's every few years. But his shifting of power, he's a domino. He's the biggest domino because of his free agency, and he's going to knock a lot of other players around. Let's face it, we are not just talking about LeBron James. We're talking about LeBron James and therefore Paul George and therefore Kawhi Leonard and therefore possibly even Kevin Durant and other players that we're hearing involved here, let alone a whole slew of lesser than king players, but still excellent players who can be moved around, and of course all the trades that would transpire as a result of it. The overriding thing, Mike and Bob, that I take away from this, I was thinking about it this morning when I knew we were going to talk about it, is how things have changed over the decades, that the owners are almost an afterthought in this process. If a player wants out, he's going. I mean, Kawhi Leonard's under contract. Kawhi Leonard is under contract. Years ago, that would have been the end of the conversation. Here it is. He says, I'm not playing for you guys. You're going to have to trade. Oh, by the way, you're going to have to trade me to my hometown where I want to go, or I'm not going to play for you. LeBron James totally controls this situation. And I was reading something where they said, do you think he'll actually opt into a contract where he'll let the owner, Dan Gilbert, have any control over him? Isn't it remarkable how the balance of power, even though we still have contracts and even though the money still flows from owner to player, not the other way around. Last I looked, players aren't actually paying the owners. All the power is in the hands of the guys who dribble the basketball.
And Mitch, the other thing that is a sidebar to all this, as far as I can always tell, is the salary cap. No matter where somebody wants to go, there always seems to be
room. Good point, Michael.
And here's another thing. Did you ever think that we would exist in a world of sports where you would read a sentence that goes something like this? LeBron has until midnight to decide whether he wants to opt in on a $35 million deal for one season of basketball with the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Right. With regard to the salary cap thing, guys, the reason why the Lakers are so intriguing is that they are the only one of the potential players right now that would be in a position to accommodate two megastars,
right,
or one megastar and another rather significant star. Other people would have to do some more juggling if they can do it.
But the juggling always gets done, though, Bob. You know, it just always seems to get
almost
done.
Almost always, but you know, but it's going to be true. That's why I mean, there are so many fascinating aspects of it, but I'm just glad that it. Oh. We're going to know so much. We're going to know something more within 12 to 15 hours. And we're going to know, hopefully that by the time we convene again on Monday, maybe there'll be a lot more to know. Well,
There will be, because the one decision that he makes tonight is very important to the machinations of what's going to happen. It won't necessarily tell you where, but if he opts in with Cleveland, there's one of two possibilities. One, he's going to stay in Cleveland, which just boggles the mind. But we have to accept the fact that, you know, it's just like LeBron James to say, "Oh, you guys thought you had me figured out, but I'm in my hometown."
And I did just go to the NBA Finals with a bunch of guys that I met at the Y.
Exactly. And so I'm going to, you know, I've been having conversations with management, and we're going to dump out this guy, and we're going to bring in other people to play with me who want to win the NBA East. That is possible. The other thing is, if he opts in, it's because he's going to be traded. And that's different than going and signing with the Lakers. Bob, you're right. But the Lakers have a ton of money, but they would prefer to just sign some guys and then dump out the guys that they have under the. If he goes to signs with Cleveland, now Cleveland says, okay, you want him? You have to give us this, 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 and oh, by the way, draft picks, you know, which is everybody's favorite thing now. So it's way different if he opts in. So yes, by Monday or by tomorrow morning or by midnight tonight, this whole equation changes, because if players stay with their team under the understanding that they're going to be traded, now it becomes a horse trading thing. And now players like Boston are potentially involved, you know, where Boston doesn't sit around with a lot of free agency money, but apparently they're willing to make trades for Kawhi Leonard. You're sitting there, Bob. I mean, I don't understand this. They've got the best coming team of anybody. Yeah. You know, I could not be more excited if I was a Boston fan about what's going to show up at training camp. And here they are possibly talking about breaking that apart to accommodate Kawhi Leonard.
Well, people are talking about it for them, and obviously there's got to be some smoke because people do their due diligence, people being reporters that I, et cetera, and it's out there that supposedly they talked to the Spurs about Leonard during the course of the season. That's a story that's out there. I know I, for one, I'm going to repeat something I've said, and I say everywhere and all day long, which is that as a fan, strictly the fan in me, and not the alleged pundit, I don't want them to make any deals. I want them to keep this team. We haven't even seen this team with Hayward and
right.
Irving together
right.
with these
More
guys
than five
yet.
Minutes.
Let's see that. I want that. And I don't think any – there's not a crying need to get Leonard. I know right. how good Leonard is and has been, and but they've got a – they've got some wonderful young talent, and they're getting Hayward and back, and let's go. I don't want to mess around with it.
Let's go back to the Cavs for one second. Mitch, do you – is there a scenario where not only does LeBron stay, but that he could possibly convince someone like Paul George to come play with him there? Is that even possible?
Yes.
Oh,
in my view,
so?
In my view, anything is possible, because I honestly believe that LeBron James is running the league. Not anybody else. No, I only say that half facetiously. Yeah. LeBron James, look at the posture that he's taking on this thing. He doesn't want anybody courting him. When did you ever hear that from a free agent? He doesn't want to take any offers. He doesn't want to take any meetings. Oh, and we're also told he wants this done quickly. It's like, anything else? He's running the league. I want this done quickly. I don't want to talk to anybody. So my belief is that he has everybody's phone number, Mike. He has every player's phone number. We're already hearing whispers that he's called Kevin Durant and said, what do you think about
how
you and me in
Mitch,
L.A.?
How great is that, by the way? Were Kevin and LeBron texting? Because I don't know how
they get this, by the way. Somebody must be working at the Verizon or something.
Are they going to meet? Did somebody pass a note during English class to meet behind the gym
to talk about the team? There's precedent, Mike. It's called Miami. All right. Miami thing happened as a result of players talking to one another. And he took his talents to South Beach, but he took them because Dwayne Wade and him were talking and Chris Bosh was going to be able to go. And that seems like ancient history now. But look at where we are today with players all talking to one another and controlling things. So I have no doubt that this is all running through LeBron. That's why when we started this segment, I said you can't over exaggerate one person's domino effect on the rest of the league.
And Mitch, we didn't even know at the time, Mitch and Bob, we did not know at the time how much that deal for him to go play in Miami with Wade and Bosh was setting the next decade or maybe even two or forever in the NBA. He changed history. He made as much history by going to play with those guys as he's made on the court.
We're still talking about a relatively small number of people. Power brokers, right?
I mean, how many does it take, Bob?
How many
to
does
become
it take
a super
to shift
team?
The balance of power?
I'm saying it's just
Mitch is right.
Kevin Durant to Golden State was all they needed to win three out of four championships here now in the last few years. So how many really? If you're talking about two, you're already talking about a major seismic shift.
Yeah. No, I'm just saying it's just. But right now in this equation this year, we're talking. There are three names, right? and it's in addition to LeBron is George and Leonard, and then and there's no one else that I can think of that's involved in this
until trades start happening.
And let me throw two other names.
The two superstars in Toronto are absolutely movable. All right, they're ready.
Everybody's for sale there. They've said that.
But particularly, right, Toronto, they got rid of the coach of the year who's now in Detroit, and they are ready to part with Lowry or DeRozan if somebody offers them. So even though they're not free agents, you know, guys who are within 1 year of free agency are essentially considered almost free agents. You want to dump out of their contracts before they walk on you. So there's more than two guys or three. There's two or three that are the flint to start the fire. But I'm promising you that within a couple of weeks, mark my words, 1 month from now on the Sports Reporters podcast, when free agency is over or whatever, we're going to be talking about some different looking teams.
And
I throw this out there to you guys because we've all been in this game a long time. We know how players feel about Los Angeles. It's just different. We know it's in every sport. If you can play in LA, if you have the opportunity, particularly in basketball where there's a great history, you know, it's not so much in hockey, but even in hockey, look what happened with Wayne Gretzky, you know, when he went to go play for. There's something about playing in LA, and for the first time in a very, very long time, LA is this big open, it's like the gold rush. It's this big open $70 million field that all these players are imagining where they can fit in with that money and, oh, by the way, still be part of the Lakers. You even have Magic Johnson saying, if I don't get some major free agents, I should quit. You know, so he's put himself on the line saying, you know, this is going to be the summer where Los Angeles gets rebuilt all over again. It's never happened that I can recall where L.A. was almost like an expansion team. You know, it's like they had enough money to spend for everybody. So this is a rare time.
Let me ask you about one of the guys who's we're going to be talking a lot about in the short run and maybe the long run, and that's Kawhi Leonard. And I know, and I'm completely aware, that a year ago, there were no questions about Kawhi Leonard, okay? He was being discussed as one of the most valuable players in the league, an amazing two-way player, young, all that. It was one of the steals of the century that the Spurs got him for what they got him for. Okay, but man, oh man, to me, in an odd way, he's damaged goods now, and not just physically, okay? And as you watch this play out, Mitch and Bob, would you go all in on Kawhi? Are you absolutely certain that this is a guy around whom you can still build a championship team?
Mike, whoever is interested in acquiring his services, whoever that director of basketball ops / GM poobah is, whether it's Danny Ainge or whether it's Rob Pelinka or whether no matter who it is, he has to conduct the conversation with that young man hooked up to a polygraph. Because I need to look him in the eye and I need to, I want to hit my first question. Kawhi, why are we having this conversation? Why? What is it? What we need to know, chapter and verse, as to what is the source of your disenchantment with an organization for whom you seem to be the pluperfect fit. And so how have we misjudged you or how have we misjudged them?
What don't we know about what damaged this relationship?
And then let's see that needle, you know, what it does.
You know, I had an old track coach who used to wear this button around, and it said, "Grin, it makes people wonder." I was thinking of that while you're talking about Kawhi Leonard, because he has done the one thing in today's texting, twittering age that you can't do, and that is keep quiet. He said nothing. Nobody has found him. Nobody has interviewed him. Nobody has talked to him. You hear people talking about his camp. You think about his people. But he himself has said nothing. As a result, a narrative, grin, it makes people wonder, has popped up because we're all supposing. Well, he doesn't like Pop anymore. He doesn't like the fact that they insulted his suggestion of his injury.
He doesn't trust the medical staff.
Doesn't trust me. He's more injured than anybody thinks, and that's why he's not showing up, because he's limping, you know. Who knows? So you're absolutely right. And Bob, in a weird way, Mike, the only way you're going to know, and here's the irony, is to use LeBron or Paul George or whatever player. They're going to be the ones who are going to, because LeBron's, they'll find out. And they'll know if he's healthy. And they'll know if LeBron wants to come to L.A. and I'm Magic Johnson or Rob Pelinka, I am using LeBron James to say, find out for me what's really going on with Kawhi Leonard. Because Kawhi Leonard's not going to tell management, but he will tell you. And so in a weird way, that information may end up coming through a player. And that player will determine if this guy really wants to be there or not. Remember, Kawhi Leonard's only 26 or so.
He'll play this season at 27.
He'll play at 27. But since he was 20, he's been a San Antonio Spur. He was raised in that organization. He's never switched a team before. He's never had this kind of leverage or used it before. And you know, the first time you get traded and have to play for a different team, it's different. We know that. It's different. And you know, if he's controlling the narrative and suddenly he realizes how much power he really has, that he was able to force his way off of a team and arguably the most powerful coach and GM in the league and get his way to where he wants to go to LA, who knows what that does to his psyche and his mentality, which obviously is a little flexible at least, because he doesn't seem to be the same guy he was. So you're absolutely right. He's the mystery man, and yet his talent is undeniable.
Okay. And you know, again, this is the time of great and wild and sometime incorrect speculation. Okay. So we don't know what was going on between Durant and LeBron. But Bob, if you think Kawhi should be hooked up to a lie detector, if Kevin Durant even thinks about leaving the Golden State Warriors, he should get hooked up with professional help. He should seek professional help in this moment if he even thinks about leaving that basketball team at this time.
It's interesting because he seems to be so caring about his image. What a blow.
LeBron doesn't even care about him, his image as much as Durant clearly cares about his own.
Yep.
Before we finish, I have one question for Grand Poobah Basketball Man, Bob Ryan.
Oh, wait, I thought that was... Okay.
Yeah, sorry, Mike. Baseball, golf, I'm going to you. Tennis, basketball, I'm going to Bob. Is Paul George that good?
Yes.
Does he make that much of a difference going to a team that talking about him in the same breath as a Kawhi or LeBron in terms of a team maker?
No, I draw a line. I think there's three people who individually.
Oh, wait, Mitch, can I just understand your question? Are you saying a team maker or a wingman?
Well, I keep hearing about it. If Paul George joins them, it's a super team. And to me, Paul George is not Steph Curry or Kevin Durant. Paul George is not Russell Westbrook. I want to know where he stands in terms of how much of a difference he makes if he joins. Yeah, I guess as a second player, because I don't think any team is talking about if we add Paul George, we're done. It's always Paul George with somebody. But how much is he Scottie Pippen or is he Klay Thompson? Who is he?
In the analogy we have here, since all this started with the Miami construction, he's Bosch. He's the next level. You draw a line. There are three. There are three transcendent mid-size. All around great players at the top of the heap, and it's LeBron, Durant, and Kawhi, at a healthy Kawhi. And now we draw a line, and we have another roster of outstanding all-star players that are not guys that are the guaranteed centerpiece of a team if they're the number one guy, and that is that's where he ranks.
Is that Kevin Durant, Bob?
So he's Bosch.
Kawhi. All right? Kawhi calling him. All right, he's Bosch. Okay. That puts it in some perspective. Bosch by himself's not winning you a championship, but Bosch as a complimentary player certainly helps.
And Mitch, do you ever really trust a guy with two first names? I don't. I know it's not analytical, but I'm just throwing that out there.
Well, Monday will most certainly bring us a lot of conversation on our podcast then, because something will actually have happened. Before we move on to the rest of the world's game, today's episode of The Sports Reporters is brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. At Buffalo Wild Wings, they will admit that they sometimes go overboard with their limited time offerings, but they can't help themselves. Take their new signature sampler. For $15, you get wings and three shareable options, like fried pickles or cheese curds. Then there's the aptly named over-the-top nachos, a literal mountain of crispy tortilla chips, loaded with your choice of pulled pork or honey barbecued grilled chicken, corn, jalapenos, and more. You can top it all off with the new platinum margarita. That's going overboard, and you can go overboard with Buffalo Wild Wings today. Wings, beer, sports, available for a limited time while supplies last. Please drink responsibly.
Mitch, wait, hold on one second. is a corn jalapeno, is that a real thing? Is that a real
thing? No, it's corn, comma, jalapeno.
Oh, corn, comma. Oh, yeah. Okay, that changed.
I guess I didn't read that correctly. I missed, did not intone the comma. And
by the
I
way, by the way, our producer, the great Lou Pellegrino, points out that Bob Ryan has two first names.
Well, the shoe fits, Bob.
It didn't happen until, you know who the first famous Ryan was?
Ryan O'Neill?
Yes. Thank you. That was the first time I remember having my surname as a first name.
That's not a bad one. Star of Love Story. Yep. Now everybody's where, named Ryan.
Everything has to start somewhere, and that's where that one got started.
So I'm saying, please drink responsibly. And I'm thinking, What a great segue into the World Cup.
Yeah.
Yes.
You mean the fact that, we've always all our lives heard the joke about drinking a town dry, and that they were on their way to doing that in Moscow earlier in this cup, literally
considering
were worried
the vodka
about running
supply,
out of beer in Moscow.
Considering the vodka supply in Moscow, it's hard to drink that town dry. But
well, now it turns to beer. Yeah,
yeah, not enough beer.
They'll never run out of vodka in Russia. No,
we finally, as a self-admitted lover of the World Cup, and I know Bob, you adore it, and Mike, I think you've come around to loving it as well. We're at that moment where you can take a breath, and there are not three games being played today and four games being played today, and we can look at the rounds. Before we talk about who's in and who's playing whom, a word about the defending champion, Germans.
Bye-bye,
auf Wiedersehen. I mean, that was stunning. And I was watching it as they played out the final minutes of their third game and realizing that they weren't going to go, and they put the coach on, who looks like he could be a member of the Beatles in 1965.
That guy.
Yeah, I love him too, but I said to the guys I was watching with, he's dead. You know, he's out, he's history.
But not in a Columbia way.
I mean, like, done. And sure enough, 5 minutes later, there were already reports on the internet, this guy's got to go. He's the problem, because he's been the coach for the last few years. That was stunning, the way that they departed. Bob, correct me if my memory of this. In Olympic basketball, how many games do they play before you're determined if you're going on to the next round?
More than three,
isn't it?
Generally, there are two groups of six probably. I think there are 12 ordinarily. So you play more than three games.
But here you get three shots, and if you come out of the gate a little slow and either tie or get beaten 1-0, you're already in trouble. And that's clearly what happened with Germany.
And by the way, Mitch, isn't the coach's last name perfect for this particular moment in history? Low. But if you had looked at every possible matchup coming into this tournament, okay, and you had them finally going out against South Korea, holy moly, somebody would have had you drug tested for that. But they had barely survived last Saturday against Sweden. And
they lost to Mexico. Right. Nobody expected that. So it's not as if they didn't have. It wasn't like they were up against Brazil three times in a row.
Right.
They were supposed to win all three of those games, and they were favored going in. And losing to South Korea 2-0 is that's the most stunning way to exit when they absolutely had to win. I was shocked by that.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny, after it happens. You say, "Oh yeah, okay. Well, listen, we saw all the signs, but didn't you think that after they won the way they had won against Sweden, that like order had been restored at least with their team going forward?"
All it does is just point out the difficulty of the no repeat thing in this competition, and they're following a pattern now of going out early after winning. So. You know, but I'm sure it's
way,
a stunning
okay,
development in the country.
In Germany.
And isn't it great? Isn't it something great has happened every single day in the World Cup? And I know that there's all this conversation now about England being better off losing to Belgium. I hope I'm pronouncing his name right. Adnan Januzaj, is that the guy who scored the goal yesterday for Belgium? That was a great shot.
Yeah, it was. It's a hell of a
yeah,
shot.
Yeah, but we've now here you can extrapolate, even if you're not a huge soccer fan, you can extrapolate the cautions from that game going forward. You've seen it in the NFL when a team clinches the playoffs and they have the 16th game of their season. So England decides to rest. Harry Kane is sitting on the bench the entire time. One time he got up and he was running around. I said, okay, they're going to put him in at 70 minutes, get him a workout for 20, 25 minutes. And then he sat back down again. They rested all their players. They've done this before with bad results. I you know, not being a professional soccer player, I don't know how much it takes out of you to play on Thursday and then have to play again on Tuesday. But I do know this about sports. Sports are momentum. And teams play in championship rounds on momentum. And when you break your momentum, and they played an absolute lackluster game, that they were just going through the motions. Either team could have won that game, England or Belgium. Belgium wasn't great.
Mitch, remember the Colts several years ago when they didn't try in a late season game against the Jets? When there was a time in that season where we thought they were going to go undefeated, and they ended up losing. And it's exactly what you're doing. I completely agree with you. There's a certain inner engine with these teams, okay? And every game, even in the before you get to the knockout round, there's a certain urgency. And anybody, and again, that was a great goal yesterday, but we had talked about it before we started the podcast today, and Mitch was saying, neither Belgium nor England played with any urgency yesterday.
Right.
And I think Belgium was happy to win. But if England gets, I think it's Colombia, if they get by Colombia, then things get easier for them. But Mitch, you're 100% right. You're playing with urgency every game, even before you get to the knockout round. Okay. And you can't hit the pause button with that.
But guys, I agree with you in theory, but this is standard procedure in international sport, and therefore they've all been through it and they all believe in it. And I would love to know, you know, if we had some data about how this has worked out over the years in the past. They're all bred to believe this is the way to go, because this is hardly uncommon what England and Belgium were doing.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, you do get injured in soccer.
Mitch, we're going to find out, right?
Yeah, we're going to find out. But again, I'm a big believer in when you go to a championship, every game leads into the next game, whether it's the NBA playoffs, whether it's the NFL playoffs week at a time, whether it's college football, you got to carry forward. And all of a sudden putting out a whole different team and playing, yes, I know you're getting your backups playing time, but who cares? You're not going to rely on your backups when it ultimately matters. And it's going to be a different group of guys starting that game when they play against Colombia. Guys who now will not have played for a week, right? Somewhere in that amount of time. So I don't know if that's good or bad. We'll see. I'll ask you something else. This has never happened in sports that we've covered. And it's never happened in the World Cup before. And there's a lot of hand-wringing over whether this is the right way to go or not. And that is the tie in the standings between Colombia and Senegal, who, you know, across the board, you know, the things that we usually think matter, wins, losses, draws, they're all, so what, they end up going on to yellow cards. And the behavior that you exhibited during your three games ultimately determines whether you will advance or not, and Colombia advances at Senegal's expense because of a couple of, if you really look back over Senegal's run, a couple of late penalties in a game that they got. I am not a fan of this. There's got to be another, I know they're trying to affect good behavior, but it kind of affects, like, are you going to play aggressive or are you not going to play aggressive? Because let's face it, this is a common situation. Tying is very common in soccer, not just in the game itself, but in the standings of the World Cup. To have such an important thing, whether you advance or not, rely on maybe your guys, you know, we're not talking about getting thrown out of the game. We're talking about penalties. We're talking about fouls. A lot of times you end up with penalties because you were being aggressive. And so you knocked a guy down because you were trying to get the ball back. But is that a reason that your team should not advance? Do you guys like this as a tiebreaker?
When we get into tiebreakers in any sport, in any country, we somewhere down the line get to a point somewhere where everyone's going to be unhappy, and this is where they reached. It's the first time it's come into play. I don't know what else they could do, however many statistical things they could come up with. the solution in soccer and hockey is penalty shots, and that will determine the championship ultimately, which I'm not ever happy with. I don't know about you guys.
Right.
No. So is that a satisfactory solution? What else can you think of? I don't know.
Let me ask you, Mitch. Let me ask you this. Okay. Remember during the NBA Finals when the whole thing with J.R. Smith and the timeout and dribbling the ball out, okay? And we wondered if when he was last with his team, if Ty Lue said, hey, remember, if they miss the second free throw, we've still got a timeout. Do you think the Senegal coach reminded his player at any point in this process, I don't want you to be unaggressive today, but you got to know that this thing may come down to yellow cards, so watch it. Do you think he ever had that conversation with his team?
No, but I do think that all the coaches have had that conversation with their team in some kind of general sense because they've had to make them aware of it. And soccer was trying to eliminate the stupid fouls and the rolling around on the ground and all the rest of it to some degree. And this is how they thought they might combine that with finding a way to determine who goes forward. It seems to me that the first thing that you should do that other sports in America anyhow do that they don't have in soccer is head-to-head. If you have beaten the other team and you tie with them, you should advance. But that's not the rule in soccer. I mean, you could actually lose out to a team that you beat but you had more penalties then. So I don't know. Shots on goal is one way you could do it. There aren't very many of those. And you say, well, a team performed, they really got a shot on goal. That means that they were a little better. But I just don't think penalties. I don't think penalties is the way to go. Senegal is going home and they were a great team. They were a surprise team, but they were aggressive. They were fun and they're out. Because of that, and I don't know what they tell themselves when they're on the way home and they're watching Colombia play England and they're saying that could have been us.
Let's see what the fallout is, because I think this has generated within their world a lot of discussion. I don't think too many people are happy with it. That's the sense I get. And of course, it's not going to help Senegal if and when it's changed by 2022 or the European, or there won't be the European Championships. Well, maybe 2020 European.
Listen,
meanwhile, tomorrow, guys, this is, we were talking about LeBron and Kawhi. This is sort of the soccer equivalent of LeBron and Steph playing on the same day. You've got Messi and Ronaldo playing on the same day in knockout games now. There's no more about, somebody loses and they go home. And here is the culmination of who's going to lead his team. Portugal is playing Uruguay. Uruguay's a good team. And Argentina plays France, which historically is a good game, and then this year is good. France is very good, and I don't know, we may be seeing the last of, could it be possible that at this time tomorrow, Messi and Ronaldo are both out of the tournament?
One other star right up there, although he may be Paul George instead of LeBron or Durant, but Luis Suarez for Uruguay is a pretty damn big name too. So, and he hasn't bitten anybody this year, which is very refreshing.
That's progress. Okay, so the left side of the draw, Mitch, don't you think the left side of the draw, that is the sexy side of the draw?
And no question.
Is Messi not the great, as great as Ronaldo is Messi not the great drama of this thing? He gets in by a blink, basically. He scores a wonderful goal the other day. They get saved at the end. There's a part of me really rooting for this guy to finally, I don't think his team is comparable to some of the other best teams, but if they get by France, hey, and Portugal beats Uruguay,
I'd watch
Argentina play Portugal. I know that.
There is nobody that's not rooting for both of those teams to win tomorrow because of they would then play one another. I would guess if it's Saturday, I guess it'd be sometime late next week. And that would be the absolute pinnacle game to watch in the World Cup besides the final. You're right. Uruguay-Portugal, France-Argentina, Brazil-Mexico, which is an interesting matchup there. I mean, obviously, Brazil is going to be favored heavily, but Mexico's a surprise team, and it'll be a lot of people rooting for them, and Belgium and Japan. Belgium's a good team. Notwithstanding their sleepwalk against England, they still won their sleepwalk. They won all three of their games. They were good before. That is a great side of the draw. You've got England on the other side that everybody is wondering, when will the heartbreak hit England? And trust me, if they lose to Colombia, you're going to be hearing that narrative that I just talked about why did the bloody coach rest everybody in the third game and they weren't ready for Colombia? And you're going to, you know, but you know something's going to happen to England. Like I said, they're Gus Grissom. You know, stuff's just going to happen to them. They are not going to end up winning the tournament. and this is the fun of it. I mean, I have enjoyed this World Cup more than any in the past, and I have wondered, is it just me? Is it my age? Am I appreciating something different? But all that I read from people who are far more knowledgeable in soccer than I am, this is a great World Cup. Like, they're all saying this is one of the best World Cups to date, to this point, in just the qualifying rounds, and before you even get to the knockout stuff, they've had more drama, more late kicks, more surprise upsets, the favorite exiting and other favorites, faltering or almost faltering. Is that the impression you guys get too, that we're seeing something, even though we're not huge soccer, experts?
I
listen.
Yes. Here's what I hope, that I am in a proper, Ryan, I hope I am with Zach Lupica in London on Tuesday night in a proper English pub with a great big TV set watching.
Oh, of course.
Watching
get England, there early.
Watching England try to advance.
Yes, get there early.
get there Monday.
Yeah, that's right.
No, it's good. The only downer, in general terms, has been that Japan Poland game when Japan didn't want to do anything, and that. But once again, people see that stuff like that bothers us, and it bothers them. But when you're a soccer aficionado and you understand the dynamics of international soccer and the competition and the mentality, that's just part of the deal. Those things are going to happen. You're going to have games like that. But fortunately, the tournament has had many more positive notes than negative notes.
I want Ronaldo and Messi on the pitch sometime next week. I don't know how this thing's going to come out, but man, oh man, forget about if you love soccer or not. If you love sports, Mitch, you got to want to see that game.
Yeah. Pick a team right now, because this is going to be the only moment we have a chance before it starts being unfair. Pick a team to win it right now.
Brazil.
Bob?
Croatia.
I'm going to go with Belgium.
Wow. Okay. So that's good. We got three different choices.
So, guys, breaking news. We have to stop the soccer talk for a moment here.
What?
Back to basketball. While we have been recording this podcast, LeBron James's agent has informed the Cavaliers that he will not be opting in, therefore turning his fate over to Dan Gilbert and the management to allow them to trade him. He will be opting out, so he will now officially be a free agent. So we have one element of the dominoes has been established. He will not be being traded for, but that just sets up a bunch of other. Now all bids are on. Now LeBron, sitting in his living room, will start accepting the phone calls, but don't stay on long with him because he doesn't want the whole pitch. And he is now officially a free agent. So that part is done. 11:59 no longer matters. Tonight, he's a free agent, and all this does is just make anything possible.
See how album ties up everything, Bob. Pitch for soccer, for LeBron. Today's episode of the Sports Reporters is also brought to you by Mattress Firm. Guys, I have a hypothetical question. Don't answer out loud, or those around you, well, it's only us, will think you're odd. But who doesn't think they're getting enough great sleep and would like to score big with a mattress upgrade? Me. As we mentioned earlier, Mattress Firm is here for you to do just that. Whether you're sore from a game of pickup soccer or haven't played sports in years, they have a mattress for everybody and every budget. And right now, when you use the code PODCAST10 at mattressfirm.com/podcast, you can take an additional 10% off already low prices. That ain't nothing. Mattress Firm has more than 3,000 stores nationwide, meaning there are no road games for finding a perfect bed at the perfect price because they're near you, and they'll deliver it to you on the same or the next day for free. Talk about delivering in the clutch. They're like if pro baseball's best closer took Mattress Firm. I don't know if that's an optic you can process, but Mitch, you know what I'm talking about. And you can even sleep on it. Not if you're a closer, for 120 nights to make sure it fits like a glove. See what I did there? Head to mattressfirm.com/podcast and take 10% off today and start sleeping better tomorrow. They always have the perfect game plan in place to ensure you the best mattress for your body and budget. Speaking of closing, the Yankees and the Red Sox begin a 3-game series on Friday night. I will be at Yankee Stadium later on. To basically close out the first half numerically of the baseball season. It could not come at a better time. They're effectively tied for first place. The Red Sox come in hot. The Yankees have gotten dinged up a little bit in the last week. They got swept by the Rays. And a three-game series, Friday night, Saturday night on Fox, Sunday night on ESPN, begins. And the tweaking of the rosters has already begun, Ryan, with the Red Sox, who needed another right-hand bat and needed somebody who's very good against left-handed pitching, have made a trade for Steve Pearce.
Steve Pearce, who certainly has a lot of stickers on the suitcase and quite a resume. And as our esteemed producer has pointed out, as now will now have been able to make the claim he has played in the entire American League East, Steve Pearce.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy.
How about it? I love that. Thank you, Lou Pellegrino, for that wonderful tidbit. That's great. That's one very helpful thing for them. They have an ongoing need for a left-hander in the bullpen, and they have they're not sure about the future of their great second baseman. But anyway, there's no real moaning and groaning available to the fans here. This team is reasonably healthy, ready to go. And here's one little thing that I couldn't have said 4 days ago. Jackie Bradley Jr. has crossed the Mendoza line. Jackie Bradley Jr. is 8 for his last 14 with two home runs
and hitting the ball the other way. Yep, yep.
And he's hitting it the other way. And this is one of the stranger phenomenons, and I'll shut up on this one very quickly, in all baseball. A phenomenal athlete who is as good a defensive center fielder, is the single best defensive center fielder in my whole Boston experience, and is one of the handful of greatest in baseball, is a tremendous athlete, but he is a strangely inconsistent hitter who was not too long ago was in the 170s, but who was once upon a time was a player of the month, and who's had week stretches where he is a very, very dangerous guy with an OPS around 1,000. No one can explain these fluctuations. But the good news for the Red Sox is this: he seems to be launching into one of his periodic good streaks.
And Mitch, before you weigh in on Yankees Red Sox, let me just say this: I was talking to Buck Showalter again yesterday, and he reiterated something he had said to me earlier in a column I wrote. He believes Mookie Betts is the best right fielder he has ever seen. So you combine that with Bradley in center. Benintendi saved a game last night with a diving play against the Monster. Bob, have you ever seen across the board a better defensive outfield than the Red Sox have right now?
Well, in their camp, I'm not going to make a sweeping claim for everybody. I'm sure someone out there can give me a couple for instances that I'd forgotten about. But it's a really, really outstanding and good win. If your least proficient one is Benintendi, that's pretty damn good. And right. And remember, Betts was a second baseman in the minor leagues. Then he became a center fielder. Then when Jackie came, they moved him to right. He's a Gold Glove right fielder. I guess his defensive win share and all that hocus pocus is phenomenal. I know what my eyes tell me, and I know how good he is. It's a really, really good defensive outfield, which of course enhances their pitching staff. I mean, everyone knows that.
Well, as the only guy in this podcast who doesn't live in the East and doesn't live in one of the two cities that are involved here, I just look at this and see the creme de la creme of baseball playing one another. It's already decided in their division. It's just the two of them. You know, everyone else should just go home, both theoretically and actually records-wise. And they're going to play, I see, not only this weekend, but then six of the 10 games that they'll have left are in the final 2 weeks of September.
Yep.
The final
yep.
meetings is the final weekend of the season. And doesn't this, I mean, there's no doubt that both of these teams are going to the playoffs, and unless the bottom falls out, and it just seems like they're going to jockey for position. And who gets to go in as a division leader and who has to go in as a wild card all the way literally to the final day of the season. It's not an accident, right? When they sit around and make the schedules, they know now. And think about what a luxury that is to the guys who make the schedules. Yankees, Red Sox, final weekend. Let's put that down here right to the start. Okay, and tell the computer that they have to play each other a lot of times in the last 2 weeks, and especially on the last weekend. You can count on the drama. I mean, it's rare in any professional sport that you can predict that when you're making the schedule a year ahead, but it seems to be with these two teams, you can absolutely count on it.
And you know what, Mitch? Here's the difference. And even though I think a one-game wild card, as much fun as it is unfair, because one of these teams is going to win 100 games and That's end right. up in a wild card game where they could run in against a hot pitcher, which is like running into a hot goalie in hockey and lose. However, I can remember I believe it was 2002, that they played, they ended a regular season, Bob, you remember this, in Fenway Park, and Joe Torre, one was going to win the East, and one was going to win the wild card, and Joe Torre basically didn't care on the last day. The Yankees ended up going out and losing in the division series to the Angels. So that has now been eliminated by the current season. And Mitch, just remember, there's one other member of the Holy Trinity in the American League, because the Astros are still great. The Astros won another game, 1-0 last night. They actually got an eighth and ninth inning where Rondon actually pitched a great ninth inning. There are three teams that have not just separated themselves from the rest of the field in the American League, they have separated themselves right now from the rest of the field in baseball.
Yeah, well, I mean, you have to consider Seattle is running behind you. I mean, give them credit for what they've done. They're still only 3.5
They can't beat the Yankees or the Red Sox, though.
No, and apparently not. But what's unfair about it is that Cleveland most likely is going to walk into the playoffs without having to worry about it. And the Yankees or Boston are going to have to beat one of those two is going to have to beat somebody on a single day and hope, as you say, that they don't get up against a hot pitcher and possibly be eliminated. Yeah. And the fact that a team like Cleveland, who is just benefiting from just an awful division that they're playing, and they just picked up a bunch of games by clobbering the Tigers, who have finally become the Tigers that everybody expected them to be, and basically starting to mail it in. It just doesn't seem right that they get in there and the Yankees or Boston could end up being knocked down. And I guess you could say the same for Houston and Seattle, but something tells me that Houston's ultimately going to not face the same kind of threat from Seattle that Boston or Yankees are going to propose for one another. But what a shame that would be. I know we're projecting ahead several months here, and it's silly to talk about it, but you almost want to move them into their different divisions because they're such good teams and they're so loaded and they've got so much in terms of hitting and pitching. I want to see them play a long postseason. And I hate the idea that one of them could go out in a single day.
Yeah, and you know, this gets interesting because tonight the pitching matchup is Sabathia and Rodriguez. Then Sale pitches for the Red Sox on Saturday night. And David Price, Bob, David Price, and again, he's pitched like David Price lately. And I really started to worry about him earlier in the season. This game at Yankee Stadium on Sunday night is kind of a referendum because he's been so sketchy against the Yankees. And I've always said that for any free agent, whether it's New York or Boston, if you can't pitch well against the other team, you can't play for those teams. So we got to see what he does on Sunday night.
Oh, his there's so many. This is the one of many references. Every game seems to be a referendum for him. And he knows and he's learned already that he will ultimately be judged by when and if he finally wins a game in October which as a starter, which he's never done. But you're absolutely right. There's going to be a tremendous scrutiny on him from the Boston fandom side on Sunday night. One interesting thing I note this year, he is a little bit more comfortable. He's quoted quite frequently. He's talked about the importance of this series rather than giving the cold shoulder that I think he may have given last year to the media. So he seems to be more comfortable in his own skin and as a member of this team this year. And that's a good sign, you know, for everybody.
And Mitch, let me just tell you, if you're planning to watch these games, just clear out, three games. Clear out about 12 hours of your schedule over the weekend. Because will not be fast, Mitch. They will not be fast. There will be 7,000 pitching changes, even with some of the star starters in this game. And tonight will start about 7. Yeah, I'm hoping to be home by 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, guys, I this is one reason why I love Alex Cora. And to that point, Alex Cora said yesterday that if he will buy dinner for the entire Boston press corps if all three of the games are played in 2.5 hours. So I don't think he has much to worry about, but it's before the thought that counts.
Before the podcast goes that long, a quick thought, Mike, on tennis. You're heading over to Wimbledon.
Yeah.
And it's going to be historic. I mean, what's nice about Wimbledon is its tradition, but I didn't know that actually carried over to the players who two of the favored players are nearly as old as us. And that makes it interesting for us, but unusual.
Mitch, you know, I was talking to our friend, the great Mary Carrillo, about this just today. And I always say this. We have an American women's champion. Serena has won 23 majors. She's going to be a great drama there to see if she's healthy, if she can win her first major since her child was born. So that's a great drama. And there's all the controversy about where she should be seated. She's ranked 180th because she was away. She's the 25th seed. Federer, who is the defending champ, who's won this thing 8 times, will be 37 years old in August. Nothing comparable to him as this has ever happened. In the Open era, the next oldest men's champion was Arthur Ashe, who I believe was 31 when he won in 1975. And I say this all the time. If Djokovic, Federer, or Nadal, had one of them had been an American, we would look at this as the golden age in the history of tennis. But in fact, it is the golden age in the history of men's tennis. Mitch and Bob, we have 3 players who have won a total of 49 major singles championships. 20 for Federer, 17 for Nadal, 12 for Djokovic. To give you a statistical comparison, Jimmy Connors, John McEnroe, and Bjorn Borg won 26 combined in their careers.
Well, you're so right about the American thing. You know, they're not our own. In addition to that, they're not fiery. Roger Federer never says anything that's controversial. Nadal, you know, has had some issues with his health and things like that, but still isn't. If you ask the average American, tell me one thing you know about either one of these players, maybe they might be able to tell you what countries they come from. I doubt it. I think most people think Federer is British. You know, that's how we are here in America. If you're not ours, we don't care that much. But you're absolutely – and Djokovic, nobody. And they think he's Ivan Lendl, you know. So I don't think that we can appreciate in this country who we're really seeing. But tennis people can. Yeah. And tennis aficionados can, and they know that this is, you're so right, Mike, this is absolutely historic. And if one or two of these guys is in the final, you know, when all is said and done, you're in for a treat. And we should be appreciating it more. You're right. If their last names were McEnroe and Connors,
oh my God,
everybody would be riveted to this thing. And it's a shame that we still haven't gotten to that point with tennis, which is such an international game. And what's the difference where you come from? You know, you play all over the world, but it seems to matter to the American audience.
And let me tell you something. I said I've got Zach Lupica with me. We got the first week of Wimbledon and World Cup going on next week. It's not going to be a bad time to be in London. All right, it's time for our parting shots, and I'll go first because what I'm talking about comes right out of our tennis discussion with a guy I just mentioned. Here's the deal. At a time when Federer and Nadal do show up at Wimbledon as the top 2 seeds and the top 2 players in the world, 10 years after they played one of the greatest matches in history in the 08 final, something right up there with Borg-McEnroe tiebreaker match, by the way. Neither one of them is the most interesting man to me at this Wimbledon, and that is because it's Novak Djokovic. Just 2 years ago, guys, it was Joker who was number one. He held all 4 majors going into the 2016 Wimbledon and was halfway to the calendar Grand Slam. And then the bottom fell out for him the way it did for Tiger Woods once. Djokovic had elbow problems and marriage problems and hasn't won a major since. Now he tries to come back. And remember something about him. He took on Federer and Nadal, who have those 37 majors between them, in their primes and beat them both. It's only been 2 years for him since he was number one. Mary Carrillo says there are comebacks and there are all the way backs. Novak Djokovic tries to come all the way back at this Wimbledon.
Bob Ryan.
Once upon a time, there was a phenomenon known as the sports off season. When that sport had finished its season, it would go dead. No news. See you next year. No longer. Now, there are 2 parts to every sports saga. Either you're playing games or you're not playing games. And when you're not playing games, there is now as much news as when you're playing games. And a new crop of reporters has arisen. Hi there, Sheffy and Woj, among countless others, whose raison d'etre is to give us not just minute-by-minute, but second-by-second update on such things as free agency, trades, and drafts. I'm not sure these guys ever actually watch a game. Oh, just kidding. I know them both. They're good guys. Now, but you know what I'm talking about, with the current Exhibit A being the potential comings and goings, depending on where you live, of LeBron James. So what is my larger point, you may ask? Where are we going with all this? Nowhere, really. I'm just throwing it out there. Have a great free fourth weekend.
Detroit Tigers pitching coach Chris Bosio was fired this week. The reason given was insensitive comments. Those comments were not and have still not been revealed. For the first day, nobody had any details, just that he was fired. The team just said it wouldn't tolerate certain behavior and he was gone. The next day was the same. By the third day, when reporters finally caught up with Bosio, he said he'd been fired for making reference to a nickname for a skinny white ball player. He said the player's nickname was Spider Monkey. That player himself says he's never heard that nickname for him, and the team still refuses to say what the offense was. In this day and age where every word and even some suggestions can get you fired, it seems important to me to find out what the exact offenses were. The Tigers are not helping the world by keeping the offenses silent. Tell us what was said exactly so people know what you can and can't say. But sports teams and their bunker mentality insist on an old-fashioned, let's keep it in the clubhouse approach to problems, when the rest of the world is exposing every inch of itself every day. It doesn't make sense. And it's not really a teachable moment if you can't share the lesson. That's going to wrap it up for this edition of the Sports Reporters. Already, things happening on the NBA free agency front, as LeBron is now officially a free agent. So by Monday, for sure, we'll have a lot to talk about there and also some World Cup matches underway. We do this podcast every Friday and Monday, so we look forward to you joining us on Monday. If you enjoyed what you heard, or even if you didn't, leave us a comment. We always enjoy reading what you have to say. Until we talk to you on Monday, with Bob Ryan and Mike Lupica, this is Mitch Albom saying have a great weekend.